Athletic.
Right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Trent and Curtis crowned a stellar showing at the King Power as Liverpool continued their top four quest. Well, Leicester were left staring at relegation and we'll shed no tears for them. We'll get into a good night's work away at the Foxes along with James Pearce, Kiever O'Neill and Andy Jones. But first, those three words. Kiever.
The hope continues.
It does. Andy.
I'm going to go with Mo the Creator.
Mo the Creator. James.
Curtis Jones Masterclass.
Love it. In fact, that's double it. Love it. It's six words, but I'm loving it. I am. I thought it was good performance, and there's so much to like about it.
I mean, Tony, I think you've got to stick to the rules here. Where you can't be giving us three words and doing about 18.
Hey, listen. I'm the host. I can say as many as I like. They're the rules. They're the rules. You know what it's like. It's the same with editors. We tell the writers what to do, and then we're fairly strict with them. And you know what? We'll throw out the rules when it suits us. And, like managers. Anyway, let's see what they're saying about us on the Walk On podcast Facebook group. Steve Baker, that'll do nicely. Robert Schemer, three Salah assists. John Clayton, United are sweating. And Tom Wilkinson, our Scousers shine.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Curtis Jones goes again and scores again. That was fabulously taken by Curtis Jones.
Trent and Curtis, both fantastic. A good night's work for the academy. James, who should we praise first?
Curtis, I think. He's been magnificent, hasn't he, the last 6 weeks, really. And, coming away from the King Power last night, I was actually reading some of the reaction to the chat I did with him on the side of the pitch at Stamford Bridge at the start of April when I think that was his first league start since October, only his third in all competitions all season. And I asked him about, the prospect of two, possibly even three big names coming in that midfield department in the summer. And he was like, I don't care who we sign. I back myself to succeed regardless. And it was typical Curtis, anyone that knows him, in terms of he's never been a young player who struggled with self-belief. But yeah, a lot of people kind of scoffed at that and thought, I think that ship has sailed. But he's backed up those strong words with deeds, because he's been brilliant. When you think, now over the last 6 weeks, nine Premier League starts on the run, the longest, sequence he's had in the team. And he's just grown and grown in stature. And I thought that was a new high for him at the King Power, not just in terms of his goals, which were both, brilliant finishes in their own right. But it's also everything else about his game, I think, that's improved. I mean, staying fit has been a massive thing for him. But also, Klopp spoke afterwards about he's being quicker in terms of his decision making, not having too many touches, not slowing attacks down, and then also off the ball. It was a great night for the academy when I think what was it the first time since 2007 that you had two Scouse lads scoring in the same Premier League game. I think back then it was Gerrard and Fowler. Now it was Jones and Alexander Arnold. But for Jones, that was a special night.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent, obviously. And I mean, is it too early, Kiever, to see this as him solving one of the positions in the midfield that we've talked about all winter that they need to buy in the summer? Do we need to buy one less now?
I think he's a problem solver, definitely. But I think I've said before this, you kind of don't count him and other players like by Cetic. I think you just can tick Liverpool have to have a plan to sign midfielders and don't count the midfielders like those kinds of players. I just think that would be the best way to go forward about this, because obviously by Cetic, seemingly to a lot of people, come out of nowhere. Curtis Jones is obviously now having a new sort of evolution in his own young career. I mean, he's 22 and it feels like we've been, seeing him play football and talking about him for such a long time. But it feels like he's arriving now. And I don't think it'd be fair to sort of rule him out starting every game next season or as many as he can, because in this form he looks, you know, he's the first midfielder that whose name's on the team sheet. He's been absolutely incredible since he got back in the team. I think for him now, it's just, it has been about this, hasn't it, putting that run of form together. I mean, I like wanted him to do that. I think a lot of people did. But I mean, he's even sort of gone above expectations in what he has done, and being able to start 9 games in a row and have like the effect and impact on the game that he is. And he just looks so good, you know, making those late runs. That's like, watched him at the academy for years. He could be a winger quite easily. I think his game just seems to be a lot more intelligent than it ever has been. And I think he's had world-class qualities. And I think James will agree, I haven't seen him probably in one of his first ever academy games. So, you know, he's always had that special sort of aura around him as a player, but now he's sort of putting it back to back in games. And it's not like he hasn't done that before, but I just think it just feels different this time.
There's been a lot of scepticism about him, Andy. You can see why with his injuries and all that. But, I mean, I often wondered, was he a forward? Was he a midfielder? Did he fall between those stools? But what strikes me is what he can give the team is something that the midfield hasn't over the Klopp era. Goals. How do you see that? Do you think he is now, he's learnt the midfield role and he can fit in that midfield where he seemed to be slightly, you know, a slightly round peg in a square hole?
Yeah, I think there was an element of Jones becoming a Liverpool midfielder, and therefore it took away some of what makes him great in terms of that, yeah, that sort of attacking instinct, because, you know, in that eight role you've got to be so disciplined, whereas now you're seeing in this, and I think that's why Trent's such an important key to this, and Klopp's reference, you're playing more as a 10 now, and now you know, one of your biggest emphasis is to get on the ball, yes, but also be creative and be the person who looks to take players on in and around the box. And that's a key part to whoever plays in that position moving forward. And I think what you're seeing is his instincts to be able to get into the right positions. I mean, the goal last night is very, very similar to the one against Tottenham, where, again, he's sniffing it out. He's seeing where the space opens up and making that back post run to get on the end of a cross into the box. And when you've got instincts like that, he's not just done that once now. He's doing that again and again. So you can see he knows it. And I think it was really interesting that I think after the match, Klopp mentioned that while he's been injured, he's had a lot of time to watch and probably analyse and study things. And he looks a lot more mature. He looks a lot more sort of certain in everything he's doing. And I think the new role helps. But I would imagine he's probably gone away and learnt a lot, you know, just off the pitch, watching things and looking at his own game, and then has been able to finally bring that in. And what we're seeing now is a consistent run of games where he's building it up. Because I think after Chelsea, he mentioned he was just sort of playing it safe a little bit, just trying to get through it. Knew that he wasn't going to be the best, you know, version of Curtis Jones. But now what we're seeing is he's building up to what last night you would say was the best version of Curtis Jones. And I think
it's amazing that Liverpool's like evolution and revolution, whatever you want to call it, you know, in this last run of games, might be down to the positional change of two Scousers, pretty much. You know, the Curtis Jones is being allowed to play a little bit more forward, which obviously suits him. And then obviously Trent, similarly, you know, let the Scousers run is what I'd say.
Yeah, Scouse power, you know, I mean, I'm all for it.
It's Alexander-Arnold, it's absolutely fantastic!
Well, we've given Curtis a load of love there. Let's give Trent some, because over the season, there's plenty who haven't. And you know what? Everyone will rave about his goal. And yeah, it's great and all that. But for me, that was Konate give him a pass. That put him under real pressure. He was being pressed. And he just zipped a 40-yard ball out wide, straight to feet. And I'll tell you what, Glenn Hoddle, back in the 80s, when he did that, the whole country had like have a collective swoon. That was just a beautiful moment. And Trent, what a player. You know, James, you know, I don't know why, one, you wouldn't build an England team around him, but we don't care about England. In fact, we despise them. But he's just something else, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, he certainly is. I mean, he's just outrageously gifted, isn't he? And you can't get away from the fact he did have some tough times this season. I think he struggled you know, at a time when Liverpool were finding life so tough as a collective as well, and you could see that, you know, his confidence had been dented. But it's been a lovely reminder the last 5-6 weeks of just that immense natural talent that he possesses. And again, he was, you know, by far and away the most gifted footballer on that pitch at the King Power. Just there's just that swagger to him that's back, isn't there? And that role, you know, has given him a new lease of life. You can't get away from that you can just see how much he's enjoying his football again. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, that sometimes when you watched him earlier on in the season, it felt like he did have the weight of the world on his shoulders a little bit. But yeah, he was the third goal just epitomises, doesn't it? That swagger that he's got going on. The fact, you know, how many players in world football could hit a moving ball like that? But yeah, so much else to admire about his all-round game. And it's just going to be intriguing to see whether this is now a long-term solution, or at the minute where he's just coming into midfield when Liverpool are on the ball. It is very different than being a midfielder permanently, because obviously if you're a permanent midfielder, there's other defensive commitments in terms of in that midfield department, and probably a lot more learning to be done. But it's working a treat at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the key to it, I mean, other teams might work out the system, Kiva, but to me, there's a simple thing. It doesn't matter what system you play, get Trent on the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now we're watching the game, and maybe we did this before, but it feels like we're doing it a lot more, and I'm doing it myself. I'm looking to see where Trent is and thinking, someone play a pass to him. You know, and I remember, I think we talked about this, you know, a few weeks ago when this sort of new role kicked off, and saying the players almost looked like they were under instruction to pass the ball to him. But I think now it's more like, you know, they just want to, because he's going to make an amazing pass. And last night, just watching him, like, I was just like, he's going to do a madness every time he gets the ball here. And, you know, a few of his passes went a bit wayward or were blocked or whatever. But most of the time, they were just like, it's like he's almost like a quarterback, but also like a golfer that's just going to hit the green and hit the fairway. And you know exactly what they're going to do. That's just exactly what Trent is doing at the minute. And I think to have such a difficult season, like James mentioned, I mean, he was on a couple of assists, wasn't he? Which was mad. Now he's, you know, he's got 8 at the minute, and maybe, you know, could end the season in double figures for that quite easily with a couple of games to go. He's a machine at the minute, and it's phenomenal to watch him. Like, it just feels like he's, he just seems liberated, doesn't he? Seems free, seems happy, and all season definitely, he just doesn't look that way. And that's, I think that's sparking an effect on everyone else around him. And that's, you know, I mean, I think been the main reason for Liverpool's resurgence in recent weeks, and how the 2 games left to go, and they might well qualify for the Champions League depending on results elsewhere. And I think Trent, you know, when we look back, will be very much maybe probably the number one reason for that.
Andy, you know, you look at his body language against City, and that was a low. And his body language now, it's night and day, isn't it? It's changed completely.
Yeah, it has. And I think a large part of that is because now he's been put in a role that is to maximise his strengths rather than, you know, potentially have his weaknesses exposed, which I think that the right-back role, especially this season when he's not had the support of, you know, of a consistent right centre-back, and, you know, the midfield cover has not necessarily been up to standards. I think, you know, his weaknesses have sort of come or been a lot more obvious. Whereas this system, it's all about getting the best out of him, and it's all about, you know, getting him on the ball and using his passing range. And I think what stood out to me yesterday was just the speed of the way he's doing everything. There was times when Liverpool would have a little bit of possession and it'd be, you know, they'd just knock it about to each other and sort of just keep it. I think, you know, trying to calm the Leicester crowd down a little bit after that first 15, but then it'd go to Trent, and before you knew it, he broke a line with a pass.
You can't press him.
Exactly. It's everything he does is so quick and so certain. He's one of them. He knows what he's going to do way before the ball's got to him. But it's also the type of pass. Pretty much every pass is forward. You know, it's breaking lines. It's getting, you know, Gakpo, I think, must love Trent playing there, because, you know, he drops into those pockets instantly. He can get on it, get on the turn. Everything he does is just so, so positive. And, you know, when you give him the ball so many times, you know, it increases the likelihood that he's going to get on a position where someone's made the correct run and he can go and find them. And it's just the speed of the way he's playing at the moment. And you can see that in the confidence, and you can see he's just, he's just loving life.
If he played like this for a whole season, I think quite easily he'd be player of the season and above anyone else. If he'd had a season of this 9 games and that had just been a run, you know, you'd be talking about an unstoppable player, an incredible season. And I think that's the hope for Liverpool, that this can continue on into next season and Trent can keep doing this. And Liverpool definitely will be in a title race next season because with his performances like this. And I think as well, I don't know if you've noticed this or thought it, he just looks confident defending more than he ever did as well. I feel like, you know, that freedom to attack, it's just given him that little bit of, a little bit more confidence when he does defend. I just feel like he's doing that even better as well. I don't know if the stats would back that up, but certainly from the eye test, he just looks more confident going into challenges.
Well, the thing is, if he's causing so much problem for you and hurting you, you're not going to attack him as much, are you? Because you don't want to commit men forwards. Because, you know, if he gets on the ball, boom, it's gone and you're in trouble. So, yeah, so that will help his defending.
The stats do back it up, as our producer guy has just informed us. He's won possession more than any other player in the Premier League since positional shift. And I think it did show that. It's been showing that on every game that's been on Sky, certainly. It'll say, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and then it's just like first in, you know, whatever stats that they're putting up. He's like that kid at school and like sports day, you know, that just wins every race. That's what he's like right now.
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic. Tony Evans here with Walk On, your dedicated Liverpool podcast, alongside James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. You know, there's still more praise to hand out, James. You know, you said recently about how Salah breaks a different record every game, and last night he came up with a hat-trick of assists. Well, to be honest, though, that the third one, the one, the free kick from Trent, he just rolls at, like, a foot. Is that an assist? Is that an assist? Because, like, it blows my ageing mind.
Yeah, I know what you mean with the assist thing. I do find a little bit ridiculous at times. When you think you can roll a pass to someone 40 yards out and then they hit it in the top corner and you get the assist, don't you? But I'd probably centre more on the first two assists that
exactly exactly.
Again, I think it's an area of his game that kind of does go under the radar, really, because usually with goal scorers like him, you know, you talk about it's all about the personal glory and being greedy. That of course you have to be at times, but it's decision making that sets Salah apart from so many of his peers in the game, because he has this incredible view of what's around him and knowing when to go it alone and when to pick a pass. And yeah, the quality of the ball for Jones for the opening goal was absolutely sensational. And then, yeah, the same with the second one, just to get, you know, the awareness that, you know, Leicester certainly didn't expect Curtis Jones to pop up essentially in the number 9 position as he did. So when you look at it, what's that? I think 14 assists in all competitions for Salah now, which when you twin that with going past the 30 goal mark in all competitions as well in a season when Liverpool have been average for big parts of it. Those are quite incredible numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. Remember, Andy, at a time when everyone criticised him for being so selfish? And do you see this as part of his game that'll develop? Do you think it's a change in us with him getting a bit older, a bit more mature, a bit wiser maybe? And you could say at some point he'll slow down a bit. So maybe he's developing his game?
I think that this element of his game has been there for a while now. And I just think, because James alluded to, I think his goals sort of, everyone thinks of him as the goal scorer and he's the guy who finishes everything off. And therefore, you can sometimes forget, you know, the other part of his game. I mean, Kiefer did a piece about, you know, his ability to win the ball back in the opposition half. I think stuff like that can go under the radar. But when you generally look at Mo Salah and sort of, you sort of see the stats and chances created and all that type of stuff, he's always up there as well. But equally at the same time, I think you're right. I think this new system does benefit it in the sense that, you know, he's coming a little bit deeper. He's got a little bit more responsibility in terms of build up, and that, you know, he's got to provide the width on the right hand side at times. And I think that, you know, he's going to find himself in those types of crossing positions really, where like for that first goal last night. And so yeah, I think the side of his game has been there, But I think it's only going to get better because, as you say, that, you know, he is going to have to adjust his game, you know, when his pace, you know, eventually begins to wane a little bit, and he doesn't have all the tools that he has now, because that's just the way football goes. But he's always had that vision, and I think he's always wanted to be that sort of creator. And I get the sort of the selfish element, because there was that at a time when it always felt like he took the shot on rather than pass. But I think you've seen the development in that, and the partnerships he's been able to build with others. So yeah, and I think he'll only get better with it, because he's certainly got the vision. He's got the ability to play those passes and create those chances. And if he can just keep doing both, happy days.
The big question now, Kiva, I'm going to put it onto you.
Here we go.
Is where does it leave them in the chase for the Champions League?
I think in a very good position. I think this game felt like it might be one of the most tricky, just because I know Liverpool have had the odd weird results against Leicester away.
And they've been awful against teams from the bottom half this season, haven't they?
Yeah, they just haven't really seemed to sort of turn up at times, or, you know, maybe it just looked like they haven't taken them serious sometimes, whether that's the case or not. But I just think Leicester was always going to be a difficult game. They're fighting for their lives, they're scrapping. Like, they've got some, you know, really talented footballers. They shouldn't probably be where they are. And, you know, relegation almost seems like it's calling them home now because of that Liverpool result. And I do think it was going to be a difficult game for Liverpool, but they just went there with the same swagger and sort of confidence that they've had in recent weeks. And, you know, that hasn't always been... Games haven't always been won so easily, and at times they've shown that, you know, the Forest game, maybe Brentford could have got away from them, or, you know, could have ended differently. So, you know, they're just grinding out wins, and that's what they've been able to do. And I think when you think of the Champions League and Man United and obviously Newcastle United as well, you just expect, and I mean, they've got to both win. Is it two games from the last? They got three, both got three games to play. And they've got to get two wins, both of them. So you'd imagine that. I think Liverpool fans now are just praying, hoping that doesn't happen. I don't know who'd be more likely to drop points, but Liverpool have done their job, haven't they? And they've just got to, like we mentioned before, obviously win out for this season and win the two remaining games and just see, you know, where it takes them.
Well, yeah, the gap was 12 points after the draw with Arsenal in April, and now it's down to one. James, Newcastle, you'd think, are the team most under pressure because, you know, they're fighting for a Champions League slot for the first time in, donkey's years. And they've got Brighton on Thursday. That's got to be a difficult game.
Yeah. I think we said on the last pod, didn't we, that out of the two, the Newcastle, I think, were the ones, you know, that there was real hope of potentially catching, because they had the more difficult remaining fixtures. And as you said, Tony, they hadn't been in this position before, which I think is a big thing at this stage of the season in terms of dealing with the pressure and expectation, and also the fans as well, because I think it'll be a very different mood, won't there, I think, around St. James's on Thursday night. I think there'll be an anxiety that comes with almost, it felt like you'd already achieved something and now it's suddenly in the balance again. And that can set the nerves jangling. Well, for Liverpool, it's the opposite. It was almost like these games were free hits, because it was like, well, you know, no one expects us to get into the top four now. And now they've built up this amazing momentum, and we know that Anfield will be absolutely bouncing on the weekend. So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't see United failing to get 6 points when you look at, you know, Bournemouth away, Chelsea home, Fulham at home.
But, good teams lose at Bournemouth. Good teams lose at Bournemouth.
but you look at Newcastle's, and of course, you know, we said last week, you know, going to Leeds wasn't going to be straightforward. You know, as it proved, it could have been even better for Liverpool, that result, if Bamford could take penalties. And then, you know, you just hope that it's the Brighton that played at the Emirates that turn up at St. James's on Thursday night and not the Brighton that entertained Everton, because talk about two ridiculous contrasts. So, yeah, if Brighton can do Liverpool a favour, I mean, I worry slightly about the penultimate Newcastle game is home to Leicester. And having watched Leicester last night, I'm not convinced there's too much fight left in there. But they go to Chelsea on the final day. And despite the horrendous season Chelsea have had, you know, just simply with the individual talent that's in that squad, they're more than capable of turning it on a day when, you know, they can just relax and play without pressure. So yeah, it's just nice, really. I still think you'd much rather be in Newcastle's position, wouldn't you, rather than Liverpool's. But it is a race that didn't exist a month ago.
Well, you look, Andy, at Leicester, 2 years in a row in the top four to the end. Looks as if they were nailed on. and basically lost the nerve. So, you know, we can dream that the Geordies will fall apart, can't we?
Yeah, definitely. Because these are, you know, it's the same as in that relegation battle, these and in a title race. These are the biggest high pressure moments, and no game is easy. Okay, maybe Leicester might be, because it looked like they're pretty much accepting their fate at the moment. But, you know, no game is easy at this stage of the season. Every game looks difficult, and a lot more difficult than it did if you were playing in November or December, for example. And, you know, Liverpool have been here. They know how to deal with it, whether that be in a title race, whether it be in a top four race, which, you know, a couple of seasons ago, whereas Newcastle, this is uncharted territory for them, really.
United, they're going to be thinking about the cup final, aren't they?
Well, yeah, there are distractions there, because they'll want to stop that, you know, that potential treble that Man City could potentially do, which would bring comparisons to what they did in 99. So, and United aren't a team who consistently get Champions League either. You know, they haven't been in it every year for a number of seasons, really, when you go back. So there is pressure on both, and when you've got someone like Liverpool breathing down your neck, who, you know, is more likely than not, and, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion, but you would back them to win the last two games. So, you know, you've got to get to 71, you know, 71 at least. United would need 72 because of goal difference. Suddenly those games do get harder, and Bournemouth away suddenly does, and give United away record, which has been pretty poor. That's not easy. And you just sort of, you hope that Brighton can just get that result on Thursday, and that will, you know, that would really, I think, would really spook Newcastle. And then what you want is you want Pochettino to be, you know, brought onto the pitch before the game on that last day of the season. The crowd's up and all the players are looking to impress, and they put on this clinic, and they channel all of their rubbish throughout the season, Chelsea, and just put it into this magnificent performance. But Newcastle will feel that pressure, and if it goes down to the final day, which you would expect it to, stranger things have happened, haven't they?
This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, James Pearce, Kiefer O'Neill and Andy Jones. Well, don't think we forgot Bobby Firmino. Gary Neville called him Liverpool's unsung hero on Sky Sports on Monday Night Football. While the Liverpool fans were singing his name for 11 straight minutes, Kiefer, what a reception for the boy.
Yeah, he's never been unsung, has he, from this part of the world? I think Liverpool fans have always been calling him the best in the world, as we know. And it was great that sort of away end was bouncing and lively, and it just felt fit. And then obviously Trent scored to sort of end, you know, the 11 minutes, which I didn't know it went on for that long. It felt like 20 minutes, didn't it? I think it was nice to see him obviously on the bench, well, behind the bench, wasn't he, sort of smiling? I mean, the away fans could probably see his teeth from there, couldn't he, with his big bright smile? And then obviously at the end, he sort of gets that, you know, moment in front of the away fans. And I just really hope for him that he's able to play against Aston Villa, even if it's, you know, coming off at the end, because he deserves an Anfield goodbye, doesn't he, in front of the Kop. And he'll get that no matter what, but just to see him play, maybe score, would be quite fitting. Otherwise, I think we'll be, you know, clinging on to the goal against United and obviously the goal against Arsenal as well. But yeah, what a player. Just watching him last night and his reaction to that and how the players would respond and the fans singing his name, you're kind of thinking, that's really real. Like, Bobby Firmino is leaving Liverpool. It just feels like he's been here forever, and it'll just be weird without him, won't it?
It does. It seems strange. I mean, no players played more for Klopp. 353 times, James. That's a lot of games. And, I mean, let's admit it. There are times when he wasn't appreciated. He is now. But there were moments when people were like, oh, need to get a nine and who can score?
Yeah, I think he had a difficult introduction, didn't he, to life at Liverpool after arriving from Hoffenheim, because there was always that feeling that, you know, did Brendan Rodgers really want him? There was, you know, in those kind of final throws of the Rodgers reign, watching him play, you know, out on the wing, might have even been as a wing back at Old Trafford, and completely isolated. And you kind of wondered, you know, what Liverpool had done, you know, spending a significant amount of money on him. But then, yeah, there was, I remember there was a quote from Klopp, wasn't there, very soon after he arrived, where he said, you know, when he was on his sabbatical, when he saw that Firmino had gone to Liverpool, he said, how have Liverpool done that? Because where Liverpool were at that time, he said, you know, for that price, he said, I couldn't believe, you know, that they'd managed to pull that one off. So you kind of sense that he really embraced taking him on. And then, of course, it was like a flick in a switch, really, when you transforming him into this false nine that was, he's just been that kind of selfless team player that's knitted everything together. When you think back to it, initially it was the understanding he had with Mane and Coutinho, of course, and then obviously Salah comes in and it just goes to the next level. And yeah, I've been, you know, collecting tributes from all kinds of people this week for a piece on The Athletic later this week. And I think the biggest thing is there's definitely been, you know, he won't, let's be honest, he's not going to be in the conversation for, you know, the greatest signing that Klopp has ever made or the greatest player in Liverpool's history. But I can't think of any player who is as universally loved as Firmino, because there's a section of people who, you know, who take a dislike to a certain player for some reason or doubt them or anything. But, you know, he's just absolutely adored. And I think part of it is the fact that he's always played with that beaming smile on his face. And he just looks like it's like he's living every fan's dreams when he steps out onto that pitch every time.
Yeah, I mean, there was never any drop off in the effort. And I think you're right there, James. You know, he's not going to be in the conversations for the greatest and all that, but I think he should be in the conversation. I don't know whether you agree, Andy, for like the man of the moment. And if you're going to encapsulate the Klopp era, you know, over the sort of the winning periods, you know, he's got to be one of the big symbols of it.
Yeah, well, I think how does that front three function without him? I think is the big key, because even though, and you mentioned it earlier, there were times when he wasn't necessarily the goal scorer and people questioned his goal return, but that came second to what he was there to do, which was knit everything together to allow Mane and Salah to be Mane and Salah. Without Firmino, what would a Klopp team have looked like? Because he was so central to this change, to the false nine. Mm. And, you know, you think back to when he did it and you go, oh, I don't know about this. What's going on here? Is this going to work? And then, you know, you see some of those early results, you know, the 3-1 away at Chelsea, the 4-1 away at City. And suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, this looks pretty good here. And then as time went on and it got better, and, you know, you got better players in around them as well, and Klopp built the squad, he remained the centrepiece to it and he remained integral to it. And, you know, Klopp's talked about how books will be written about how he's played the game and how he changed that number nine role. And he did. I've never sort of, the false nine became much more false nine after Bobby Firmino, didn't it? And other teams started to look at it a lot more. And it was because of the influence he's had, not just on Liverpool and the way they've played, but also the influence on the game, I think. And I think you're right. I think that, you know, he epitomises the Klopp era, I think, in terms of everything about the way he played, the way he went about his business, but also the personality, the character, the big smile. There's always been that enjoyment, that fun of playing footy, and that's exactly what Bobby Firmino did and has done every time he stepped on the pitch at Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, football fundamentally should be fun. It should be a laugh, and he encapsulated that. Kiva, what are your favourite memories?
One that sticks out is that, obviously, I mentioned Liverpool fans singing, you know, that he's the best in the world. And he literally was when he scored Liverpool's, you know, winning goal in the Club World Cup.
It's Firmino. Is this it for Liverpool? Roberto Firmino! The Brazilian against the Brazilians!
That just felt like his moment, didn't it? And a moment he'll look back on forever, and I think Liverpool fans will be. So, you know, he was the one that made Liverpool world champions in that moment. He's brought Samba to Anfield, Samba magic, always. You know, he always looked to do everything beautiful, everything creative and fun. And he's made football a joy to watch. He's always been a joy to watch for Liverpool. And, you know, wherever he goes, I think he'll remain to be. It'll be probably difficult for us to see him playing for someone else, just because, you know, Bobby Firmino is Liverpool, and I love that, you know, he could quite easily be Roberto Firmino, but of course, you know, it's quite scouse that he's Bobby, isn't it? And I think he'll remain Liverpool's Bobby Firmino for forever because, yeah, he is just, you know, we were saying similar things a year ago when Sadio Mane, you know, could have been, obviously was leaving Liverpool, and, you know, it just feels quite emotional almost, doesn't it? That, you know, that front three, that sacred front three, will now be down to just Mo Salah. And yeah, I think Firmino deserves all the flowers he's going to get over the next couple of weeks.
There's not, for me, an iconic goal, James. There's not an iconic moment of skill. It's just that his career in the round, you know, in fact, if anything, it's the mad high-kicking celebration that come to mind first. It takes a special sort of player to get that sort of, to provoke that sort of feeling.
Yeah, yeah, I think, I was trying to think actually of the favourite memories, and, you know, Kiva mentioned one there. You know, I was in Qatar when Liverpool won the Club World Cup for the first time, and that, you know, I'm sure if you asked him, that would be right up there across the 8 years, because especially the fact he was doing it against Flamengo from his country to be the man that won that trophy, because we know for South American teams, that's always meant, you know, a hell of a lot more than I think it does to European opposition winning that competition. And I think he scored twice, didn't he, in that 5-2 demolition of Roma. Was that 2018? You know, that season, 26, we talk about him not being, you know, he's never been a massively prolific goal scorer, but he got 27 in all competitions in 2017-18. Yeah, yeah. That was, you know, it was a hat-trick, wasn't it, against Arsenal, I think, the following season. And but you're right, it's more, I think it's just more the general way in which he's gone about his business. And, you know, I think back even to that first season, I think I still see it sometimes on Twitter during the rounds, like the short little clip of, I think it was a spin he did against Villarreal in the semi-final of the Europa League, when, of course, Liverpool had lost the first game 1-0 over there. And if you remember rightly, the Villarreal manager had gone absolutely berserk at the final whistle. And I remember Klopp afterwards, you could tell he was going to use that as part of his kind of banging the drum ahead of the second leg. You know, did you just see how much they've celebrated? And then if you remember rightly, you know, Anfield was absolutely rocking that night, and Firmino led the charge. And yeah, just an outrageous piece of skill to embarrass a couple of defenders.
I think it was Soldado. He sent him for the echo, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's I think that it's moments like that you remember him for, just, you know, just the outrageous bits of skill and the some of the assists, you know, the ridiculous flicks and tricks that he has up his sleeve. And again, it all just comes down to he's almost played the game like, you know, like there is no pressure on his shoulders, that you know, why can't I just take risks and express myself? And he's just a unique footballer, isn't he? Like, you're never, ever going to, you know, I know we've talked about, you know, Cody Gakpo has been immense since he's come in and looks like he's tailor-made to kind of carry on that false nine role. But he's not Roberto Firmino. There won't ever be another Roberto Firmino. That's why it's going to be incredible on Saturday. I think it was interesting both hearing Klopp and spoke to Jordan Henderson after the game, talking about the need to control the emotion on Saturday, because, you know, he was saying, you know, yes, of course we want to give a proper farewell to these big names that were sadly waving goodbye to. But he said, you know, the most important thing is winning the game. So you just hope Liverpool can do both, because what you wouldn't want to do is that emotion ended up affecting anything in terms of what goes on the field. Ideally, you get the game won inside 75, 80 minutes and you give Firmino the last 10 or 15 that we all want him to get, because, you know, Klopp said last night, he's the players are off today, Tuesday, but Firmino will be in, and then Wednesday back with the squad, having missed the last six games with a muscle injury.
Yeah, and that would be brilliant, wouldn't it? And, you know, 3-0 up, quarter of an hour to go, put him on, he gets the fourth, everyone would be happy, Andy. That to us, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the ideal one, isn't it? That would be the perfect scenario, and then we get to sing the Firmino song for another 10 minutes straight.
Might be even longer.
Yeah, just thinking back over. Yeah, probably. I'd imagine they'll struggle to get a few out the ground afterwards. But yeah, just to go back to some of the memories as well. I think the one that sticks out for me is there's the last minute winner against Tottenham at Anfield when fans came back in. And I just remember him sort of running the length of the pitch just to go over to the fans.
Yeah, that was after COVID, wasn't it?
Was that the Tim Sherwood commentary goal?
Yeah, yeah. So it was in that weird bit where fans started coming back in and then had to stop, I think.
What did Sherwood say? It was something like,
not too worried about these corners. I mean, it might come back to bite me here, but I think Tottenham have got the dominancy in the air there, you know, so I'm not sure anyone can get the head on the first ball for Liverpool apart from that one.
Oh, Sim! Oh, it's Firmino! It's classic Sherwood.
Classic Firmino.
And then the only other one, well, yeah, and then the only other one would be is belted against Stoke away from home when he came off the bench and Liverpool turned it round and he took his top off and he threw it in the air and then it landed perfectly with Firmino 9 on the back. And I was like, if anything, one, for a player who was all about touching class, to just blam it past the keeper was class. But then just to lay it out perfect, I think just summed up Firmino in that everything he did was just so majestic that is even his top when it was flying through the air landed perfectly with his name and number.
I remember seeing him years ago. I think probably maybe his first season. He was with his family. There was a sunny day down the pierhead, maybe not long after he joined Liverpool. I remember saying to like my family who I was with, oh, that's Roberto Firmino, he plays for Liverpool, and sort of pointing him out. And I think back to that and think, you know, he probably couldn't walk down there now without, you know, a swarm of fans behind him or following him, asking him for pictures and autographs because, you know, he arrived at Liverpool as a talent, but he's leaving as an absolute superstar, isn't he?
He is. And you know what? We're going to miss him. But he may still have some more memories to leave us with. Let's hope so. That's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James, Kiefer and Andy, and you as well for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday as we gear up for Bobby's emotional farewell and assess what threat Aston Villa may bring. We'll catch you then.
Athletic.